Hello, everybody, and welcome to Actually Comics for this November 28th.
Yes.
2018.
Yes.
I'm Tristan.
I am Bob.
And we have some things.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of comics as usual.
It's been another week. This is the fifth week, so it's kind of a little bit on the light side, but there's still some great stuff.
Oh man, it didn't feel light to me.
It did not. It doesn't look light from this giant pile.
In fact,
but
I pulled comics out of our pile because I didn't want to carry it in my backpack because we were like, this comic isn't that great. We only pick out the best.
Only the best.
Only the best.
Yeah. So
only the 50 best comic books.
So let's
really narrowed down the pile.
This one's great.
Yeah. Oh man, did I love this one.
Yeah, me too.
It was so good.
Action Comics
1005 by Brian Bendis and Ryan Suk.
What a good friggin' book. There's a great
There's two. It's like a 1-2 punch right at the beginning.
It's a 1-2 punch of crazy characters that I've been really excited to have back in the DC universe, and they just both came back as a as a package deal.
One of them is like an object, and one of them is a character, and awesome. Just the art is so good. There's been the overall story in Action Comics has been the Red Cloud, which is some entity that is burning down buildings and was initially blaming the burnings on Superman, but then it was found out that it was not Superman who was doing the burning. And then this issue, you find out the secret reveal. But it was really, really good. There's some great lines of dialogue in this. It reminds you yet again of why the best thing DC could possibly have ever done is to get Brian Bendis to write comics for them. Good job.
Good on ya.
Good job.
Okay, here's a shocker. Next? This is another one that really surprises me.
I love this comic.
Yeah, Black Panther versus Deadpool.
Please.
What a surprisingly good book. Mm. There are so many moments in this. There are some very, very fun little things. There's some crazy things. I mean, they're experimenting with the healing factor concept and some really ridiculous results.
Yeah.
Very, very cool.
It's definitely not like if you're like a healing factor wouldn't work like that, you know, so it's got like bits of continuity that are cool, but also just kind of like, it's just a fun story.
Are you saying you can't bring a zebra back to life with a healing factor?
I am saying that you cannot affix a zebra's head to your arm and have it become your new arm and then also name it something and have it as your pet that was also attached to you at your shoulder.
I don't believe it.
I don't think that's how they work. You know, science says
you can't do that.
Sorry, that was probably really loud. If anyone was listening to you, should maybe back off the volume because I am revved up.
Everybody. So Dead Man Logan number one. This is Old Man Logan getting dead. We've got
he has 12 months to live and 12 issues to die.
Oh, that's a shame. But would imagine the next one if after this 12 issues the body of Logan just goes through the Marvel universe like Weekend at Bernie's, and put him into wacky scenarios.
That would be great. I'm not sure you could carry that for 12 issues, but
I would.
Ed Brisson, Mike Henderson, the art in this Dead Man Logan miniseries was really good, and I was not expecting to think this was anything more than just how they were going to kill off this character. And while it may or may not serve that end, it is in terms of being a comic book enjoyable.
Yes.
Speaking of lots of dead people in a comic book,
let's talk about Heroes in Crisis number 3.
Heroes in Christmas.
Yes, this is midlife crisis for Heroes number 3.
It sure is. This is a comic that is literally designed for me, and yet I want nothing to do with it. Except for it's not that bad.
See, I'm absolutely digging it, even though they clearly stole a character from The Tick. This mermaid character.
His name is Lagoon Boy, and Lagoon he was created Boy. By Peter David in Young Justice.
Lagoon Boy is very much the misplaced Prince of Atlantis from The Tick.
Okay. I mean, that's cool. There are a lot of things that are just kind of really, to me, very silly about this whole thing, but Heroes in Crisis number 3, and you start to find out why, who died, why they died. And let's really quickly talk about this other thing, which is the side effect of Heroes in Crisis, which is Titans number 30, a comic that is completely garbage, And the cover is just like the characters that have been killed off in Heroes in Crisis, like one by one they fall. It's like this thing where it's like designed to get people who like these characters to pick up the comic, and yet what you get inside the comic is nothing to do with any of Heroes of Crisis or any of that stuff. And I will say, while I'm riffing and Tristan is helping his cat into a different area of the studio, and normally I wouldn't have this much to say about it. Heroes in Crisis was, the art's really good, you know, whatever. If you're into it, you're going to keep being into it. The new one's out.
And they're going to continue to be in crisis.
That was too much riffing.
I'm sorry.
Don't make me do it again.
God. Okay. Let me tell you a story. Here's a story about how...
A man named Brady?
My world got flipped, turned upside down. Well, what happened was the earth was drowned and everybody turned into a fish person.
Oh, man. Swing my hatchet round and round. I'm a clown until the earth drowns.
Until the earth drowns. So this is the last part of this big drowned Earth Aquaman Justice League crossover.
Yes. It is 100% setting up the new Aquaman series, yeah, which looks to be really great. And
that's pretty much the whole thing, is that it's a setup for the status quo change. Cool. Yeah. You know, whatever. It is what it is.
If you're into large comics with many artists,
yes.
Although some of it is Francis Manapul, who is amazing. There was some really cool art. The coloring was, we discussed in the store, a little bit to be desired there.
Yeah, a little heavy-handed.
Not so clear.
Yeah.
On the Drowned Earth number one. Somehow it's the final issue, but it's number one. Anywho, it does clearly set up what I assume will be next week's Aquaman issue, I'm psyched for that. It's going to be great. We're going to be talking about it. We're going to say it's great.
Batgirl number 29 is out.
Yeah.
I'm probably only talking about it because it has a really awesome Sean Murphy cover with the newly designed costume, blah, blah, blah. But it's cool. Yeah. Paul Pelletier, he does very serviceable art.
I think that's kind of his deal.
That, like, every time he's on a book, you know that it's going to be correct.
He's rock solid. Paul Pelletier. Also from Maine. One time I held Paul Pelletier's hand at a hand fasting ceremony in Maine.
I was so sure you were going to say Hands Across America.
No, it was like a wedding ceremony kind of thing.
Oh.
And I didn't know who he was until afterwards.
So,
and then I was like, wait,
are you guys married now?
No, I didn't marry him then. Maybe
it
someday.
Was later.
Maybe someday.
Okay.
I got my fingers crossed. Paul, if you're listening, let's get married.
Let's stay together.
Oh, man. Okay, so what's next?
I want to talk about Hex Wives number 2.
Yeah.
This is, this book, it...
There's lots of sexy sexing in
it. It's full of sexy sexing.
Full of sexing.
I like it. I feel like my only problem with this book is the fact that it's not Lady Killer. And that's really giving me issues because it's set up to look just like Lady Killer. The art, like the design, it feels like Lady Killer. And so every time I look at it, I'm kind of disappointed that it's not that perfect art from Lady Killer.
Yeah.
And that's so unfair because the art is great in and of itself. The story is great in and of itself. But man, it is just, it reminds me so much of Lady Killer. And I'm like, damn it. Now I kind of miss Lady Killer.
It must just be like the style of it because the comic itself is like an ensemble. It's very different, but it's...
Stylistically.
But stylistically with that 1950s housewife kind of pastiche. I did not enjoy this comic.
Yeah. I hate
to say it.
I think it's fine.
Yeah.
It's not my favorite thing in the world, but I thought it was fine.
It seemed fine.
Riri Williams, Ironheart.
Hmm.
It's a comic book with Riri Williams, and she's Ironheart.
It starts with a bang and ends with a whimper to me. It was good, but I wanted it to be its own thing, and it wasn't as much.
It's weird because I apparently don't know how to read comics. Because you were saying that you were like upset about it being some sort of Spider-Man villain. I don't even remember. There it is now.
Yeah,
I was like, this.
I don't even know his name.
The villain fight was so secondary to all of the rest of it.
Yeah.
What is really good about this book is, it's about how it portrays interpersonal relationships and, you know, somebody who's a little awkward and weird and nerdy and how she's developing a relationship with this person that she hasn't seen for a really long time. And I loved all of that stuff.
No, that stuff was really good.
The superhero stuff is so secondary, and I'm okay with it being bad if it's secondary because I don't care. I care about the super science, and I care about her relationships with other people. Like, I like the crazy sci-fi elements of her inventions and all that stuff. The rest of it to me is kind of like the superhero punch-up stuff. I could take or leave. Honestly, yeah. It could be, I would kind of honestly rather see this where she is not even a superhero.
But yeah.
Where she never puts the damn suit on.
That would improve it to me.
I feel like I care about everything else. And then she's like, she goes out and punches someone and it seems anticlimactic. It's like, yeah, but you just fucking invented something that changed the world and then punched a guy who was trying to rob a bank. Who cares?
I also do like that she creates the Geordi LaForge visor in it. So what was really cool about this to me was literally exactly like 100% agreement. Like, there's the part where she's like, here's all this cool super science stuff I developed, and everybody's like checking it out and they're not into it because it's too weird and smart. And then she is like, here, I made this arm cannon that 3D prints, and they're like, ooh, yay. And so it was cool. But the thing is that it is a superhero comic and it does have superhero fights in it. And the only complaint in it, it's not really I hated it or anything like that. It's just like, I would rather see her fight her own villain than just like a recycled villain from some other series. Yeah. Because when you're reading it cold, let's say, like, I only know that character from just, like, visual. I've read some Spider-Man comics, and I recognize this recent addition to the Spider-Man comics. So, but I don't know who it is, and I don't care. But if it was a completely new character, it would not be as off-putting to me as a
fair.
as a brand fresh eyes reader.
Yeah, I agree, but I also think that
the art was good.
The character is so new
that
she's just like, nobody knows who she is, so nobody has particular beef with her.
Yeah, and it was cool. I mean, it's this. I think that there's definitely potential for it to be really awesome. And it was an okay first issue. I didn't think it was over the top great.
Okay.
Anyway, whatever.
Yeah.
There's a Labyrinth comic.
There's a Labyrinth comic. Labyrinth Under the Spell number 1 is out. It is a gigantic book.
Two stories in it?
Three? Two stories.
Two or three
stories, something like that.
Several stories.
It is.
It's a tall comic.
It is. It is definitely for people who like a certain type of artwork.
Mm-hmm. I've never, this is weird to admit, I suppose, but I've never seen Labyrinth, so I didn't read it.
Oh, that's super weird.
I know.
That is really fucking weird.
I've actually never seen The Dark Crystal either.
What?
I know.
You know, I put on a showing of The Dark Crystal at a theater with the guy who did a lot of the artwork, right?
I probably didn't see it because I've never seen Dark Crystal. I've just never seen it. And Allie is the same way with me. She's
you know, he made a bunch of Muppets, too.
I like the Muppets. No, I just don't know when I'll see it. You know, I mean, I guess that was the perfect opportunity.
It was middle of the night. Anyway, I got to say, The Dark Crystal, pitched as a kid's story, definitely not a kid's story, definitely mostly just to traumatize children.
Oh, well, like, Jim Henson, perhaps that's why I didn't like it as a child.
Was apparently like super upset that they tried to pitch it as a kid's movie.
I think if maybe I'd just been like a little bit older when it came out, we were about the same age, so maybe that's not it, but I just, for whatever reason, I just never saw those ones. I did, and it freaked me out, but that's why I didn't read the Labyrinth comic, which looked fine.
I didn't see it in here, so I'm just going to talk about it right now without it. Batman Beyond.
Oh yeah, I didn't read it.
So Batman Beyond, I just thought about this because I don't really read Batman Beyond.
I read the last issue.
All the time. And that book is constantly good. Huh. Like, it is a consistently good comic. And the reason I don't talk about it is because it's so consistently good and it has a core following in the store, at least, or I think everywhere. And people just buy it consistently. They never fall off because it never really gets bad.
Huh.
It just is fun. And I feel like so many books like get a real kick in the ass from being terrible. Like, it's this book will be really bad. And then they're like, no, wait, you know how terrible it was? It got better. And then everybody goes, oh, wow, it got better. That's great. And I feel like Batman Beyond is a book that just never got bad. And so it doesn't get that kick in the ass that a lot of those books do.
That's weird. And the thing that I'm wondering, that's a really interesting. So I read the last issue, which was the one that was drawn by Cully Hamner, who I follow, and that's why I read it. And I thought it was really good. But then this new one came out, and I didn't even pick it up. So what's why is that? What is it about Batman? Let's figure this out, the mystery.
I don't know.
What is it about Batman Beyond that makes people who don't already read it not read it again?
You got me, man, because it's great.
So the new issue was good.
New issue is great, and this is the return of the Joker. So you get one of these stories where the actual Joker's back. Now that we've established that pretty much the Joker is immortal, now you can have the actual Jack Napier Joker in Batman Beyond. Because
wait, you mean like the Jack Nicholson Joker?
Yeah, basically. Okay. Well, I mean, I guess now you're not allowed to call him Jack Napier except for in the White Knight.
Oh,
that's right. Well, so he's the regular Joker, whichever one he is. There, we'll figure this out when the Three Jokers comes out next year.
The Jokeriest Joker.
The Jokeriest of them.
Speaking
all.
Of sort of Batman Beyond and sort of the Joker, there's Old Lady Harley number 2 came out, which I did a cursory flip through. And found out that Harley Quinn at one point was married to Nightwing. Also, Batman Beyond is kind of in it, but the continuity is different. So, and there's the weirdest version of Bruce Wayne that you have ever seen.
And also, my favorite part is all the stuff that takes place at the old folks' home.
Yeah, yeah.
And you get Catwoman in a little scooter.
Oh man,
Catwoman in a Rascal.
And Clayface is just all soggy, saggy. They're all cool.
It's fun.
It's cute. Yeah. I didn't really do more than flip through it, but it looked fun. And that's what comics
exactly
often are and should be.
Exactly.
Maybe often should more often be.
Speaking of things that are just fun, Scooby-Doo Team Up. What a fun book.
Yeah. Scooby-Doo teaming up with Dastardly and Muttley.
Yep. They're going to catch that friggin' pigeon.
It is amazing. I was saying this to you in the store. It's like they lifted the cells directly from the 1970s Hanna-Barbera and just like put them in the comic, because there's so many things when I was flipping through that I was like, that's exactly how they look, and just the way the animation of those cartoons was, like they barely moved more than the comic page would actually move, so it totally worked. And I think the last one was like the Doom Patrol. So it's like these weird team ups are fun. This one was cool. Yeah.
And a lot of them are like deep dive continuity for DC, which is also super fun.
Yeah, right. Didn't they have a Justice Society one?
There's a Justice
like the
Society.
Only Justice Society comic that's come out in like the last. That's how they revived the trademark.
Scooby turned into the Spectre once.
Oh, man. Crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. So also,
I read this one. I liked it.
This is another great book. Yeah. Amazing Spider-Man 10.
Yeah. I haven't loved every issue of this series, but if it were more like this, I would be more interested in it.
I think the last two issues are proving that this series has legs and that it can continue. I think that it was definitely having trouble finding its feet for a while, and definitely this issue and the last issue friggin' ruled. And Ramos, awesome. Oh my god.
Yeah.
I'm dying. Literally the best Venom. As far as I'm concerned, he draws the best Venom.
Yeah.
He shows up for one panel and it is the goddamned best Venom.
So this is
love it.
Something that I've talked about many times, probably on this podcast more than once, and I think it comes up in terms of that the Deadpool versus Black Panther comic, but also in terms of Ramos, Humberto Ramos. Kinetic art in comics, like Darwin Cook is like, to me, like the perfect example of that. Just someone who had like the drawings had like, and I think someone like Sean Murphy, who we talked about before, like there's like movement in this static form. And it's really when it's amazing to me when someone finds interesting ways to pull that off. And I think Ramos does it really well and does it really well consistently.
Absolutely.
Like he's not like, you know, he could do a monthly every month, do something. And it's like, that's not very many people can do that and still have the output quality be good. And I just really, we're not really saying much about the comic. It's Spider-Man and Black Cat. And so fans of Spider-Man have noted that there was some seemingly irreparable damage done to their, not just like that they used to be a couple, but like, they had like kind of a camaraderie for a long time and that was kind of broken apart. And this is kind of addressing that. So for me, it was cool that it was just essentially kind of a fun story. But then on top of that, it was like addressing these kind of things that had gone down in the past months of the series. So overall, I thought it was really enjoyable. That's who's the writer on that again?
That's Nick Spencer.
Nick Spencer. Good job, Nick Spencer.
Okay, so here's one. Okay.
Oh, what are we talking
about?
This
is a confusing book. Yeah. This is a book called The Warning.
Yes.
And
Image? Image? Yes.
It is by Image. It is from Image.
Image. From Image.
And man, I don't know.
The impressive part about it is that it is written and drawn by the same person. That's always like a impressive thing, and it's a new voice and a new kind of style. It's
it
a
is.
Military post now military thing about
some sort of alien invasion type thing.
Yeah.
The thing that's weird about it is the way that the voice is. This person definitely has taken a swing here. And I feel like I'm going to need to read the second issue before I know if that swing pays off, because they've gone very, I'm not going to say intellectual, but very, very new agey with the way that they're telling this story. It's, it starts off and they're literally talking, he's addressing a honeybee who he believes to be the reincarnated soul of a soldier who died in this fight that he's about to go into. I don't know.
It's also a soldier talking about the karmic wheel.
Yeah, it's interesting.
The narrative style is very kind of like pseudo Tarantino-esque, where it's like different parts of the story are being revealed before they occur and after, and so it's like it's maybe something where it's funny because like in the end of this, there's an ad for a graphic novel that this guy, this guy that we're talking about is LaRoche.
Yes.
Edward LaRoche or however you say it.
Sure.
And anyway, he had a graphic novel called The Almighty or Almighty. And there's like from the write-ups of it is apparently, well, goddamn amazing, says Patton Oswalt. And I am interested in checking this graphic novel out just to see, like, maybe this is more a graphic novel broken up into chapters, and it's one of those things
that's
where it's maybe not fair to review it by one issue.
That's, I mean, and that's really how I feel about it, because I feel like this issue, I wanted to just dismiss it as being kind of an egotistical, like, kind of, like, overblown
navel-gazing.
Yeah, yeah, that kind of thing. But there's enough to it that I have the feeling that it's not that.
No, I think and
that once it's revealed, I think that this is going to be a story that I'm going to care about.
Yeah, and the idea of the invasion is handled in a way that's not something that you've like, oh, I've seen something where it's happened like this before. It seems like it's a novel, like kind of someone spent a lot of time thinking about what, you know, so it's.
I will admit there are a lot of stories like this, the way that they're kind of told, that like Grant Morrison is a perfect example, where I'll read something in a single issue and I'll be like, fuck this dude. He's up his own ass. I do not care. He's an idiot. He's just overblown. This is going to amount to nothing. And then I read the next issue and I'm like, God damn it, that was smart.
Yeah. I would be willing to bet that there will be some really smart moments. And this was like, it was just, it's not enough to really grab what is ultimately going to happen. But intriguing first issue, if a little unwieldy.
Absolutely.
Castle.
And speaking of very smart comics that are ethereal and just hard to grasp, The Return of Wolverine.
The problem, and this is actually, so this ties into Heroes in Crisis and all of this stuff. The problem with this is not the comic. The problem with this is the editorial guidance behind the comic.
Correct.
Because The Return of Wolverine is being handled so poorly that Wolverine is in 18 different comics, but like none of them are the real Wolverine, and none of it really makes sense. Like there's a Fantastic Four comic that's out where Wolverine's in it, and they're like, so you're really back? And he's like, we're just not going to talk about that. And it's like, okay, you're like literally addressing continuity as like conversation.
Yeah.
Like it's dumb. And there's like the Spider-Man Deadpool thing, that comic where Spider-Man is basically yelling at Deadpool the whole time that he needs to stop talking to the people that are reading the comic, which is kind of in itself is like trite. I thought we didn't bring that one to talk about, but that kind of a thing with that Fantastic Four is just like, you know, like you're basically like mocking the whole deal in comics that are coming out in real time. And that's Dan Slott, who I suppose can get away with that stuff. But Return of Wolverine, number three, I would say it has art by Declan Shalvey. It's got a short, like a small team of X-Men, all fan favorite characters. They fight Wolverine. If you're just looking for a Wolverine fight, this is a great comic where he fights the X-Men. It's like Iceman and Storm and Kitty Pryde.
But I still don't know why he's doing it. Or
it
why
doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. And this villain is like, and it's funny because in Riri Williams, I was like, oh, I want her to have her own villain. And in this one, I'm just like, God, can you just have him fight someone I know? Like, I don't know. It's weird. I guess I just can't be pleased. That's out. The Return of Wolverine number three.
Okay, this is
this comic is another one that like I don't get on so many.
This is like
so many levels.
I could talk about this for the next 10 days. And never even get anywhere on this. Yeah. If anybody has even the slightest clue of what this is about, I would love to hear it. Yeah. But this is Marvel Action Spider-Man from IDW.
Yes.
I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
So we'll address, number one, why is there a Spider-Man comic coming out from IDW and not Marvel? Number two,
why would Marvel not put this out?
This is clearly, I guess, supposed to be like a Spider-Verse kind of thing, because the whole comic is Spider-Gwen, Miles Morales, and Spider-Man, but he's a kid, and they just team up, but there's no explanation. So it's this idea that this is this Spider-Man comic for kids that makes, like, no kid. I mean, I guess a kid who saw Into the Spider-Verse maybe would be like, oh, cool, it's these characters. But it makes no narrative sense, and the comic itself is really, like, there's just nothing to it. I didn't really like the art that much. I just don't get it. And, like, why, if Marvel wanted to do a Spider-Verse comic, I mean, they're already putting out, like, 20 of them. Like, why are they putting out another one through IDW? Unless it's, like, a distribution thing. Maybe IDW has a different distribution path.
I just can't figure it out. There's nothing.
Maybe Disney can't make comics in India and IDW can or something.
There's one thing that I can think of, and that's it. The only thing I can think of is that IDW somehow can get away with paying their people less. And that they can make the comic for somehow considerably cheaper. Because all I know is...
But someone's making money off it.
I know. And they've got to pay licensing.
I think it's China. I think it's that Marvel doesn't want to make a Spider-Man comic for China, and IDW can put out comics in China.
Maybe.
I think it has to be a distribution thing. It has to be. Like, there's some place that Marvel can't go that IDW can, and that's why they're doing it.
Why else would it make sense? Disney is banned someplace.
Yeah, somewhere. I don't know. Maybe it's Indonesia. Maybe it's... I don't know. I don't know where it would be. And I'm probably stupid and probably completely wrong. But I think that the only thing that makes sense for why it would happen would be that there's some place that you can put an IDW comic that you can't put a Marvel comic.
Yeah, Anyway. It just boggles my fucking mind.
I feel like if you're looking for a Spider-Man comic that has multiple Spider-Man in it, you could probably find... five that are at least as good as this one somewhere else.
Here's my next... Okay, one last theory.
Yeah, sure.
One last theory on this. Okay, so somebody at Disney was just like, I bet we could run a short grift on some dumb little comic company. And they were like, hey, you want to publish a Spider-Man comic? You want to publish an Avengers comic? You can use all of our characters. And then they publish 100 other really great books all at the same time and just flush IDW down the toilet, and they just pay them a bunch of money.
Okay, but then I just flipped this comic over for the first time and saw that Marvel Action, IDW of Marvel, is going to do a Black Panther comic by Kyle Baker?
Yep.
I don't know. I don't get it.
And Avengers is coming out.
Yeah, but Kyle Baker on Black Panther. Like, you can do that. Why don't... I just don't get it. Anyway, whatever. We don't understand it is the capsule review. Can I talk about Wonder Woman really quick? Because we don't have it over in this pile. Wonder Woman 59 is the second issue of the new creative team, G. Willow Wilson and Gary Nord. I think the art is so cool and the story is really interesting. I like the Wonder Woman stuff that works with mythology, the Greek mythology. It's always my favorite Wonder Woman stuff, and this is a new take on it, so it's cool. There's like a Pan, there's a Minotaur, there's a Centaur, there's a Pegasus. that Pegasus is wants people to give him a massage. It's funny. There's just, you know, it's all the people are there. Steve Trevor and
I like this art.
The art is so good. It's the guy that drew Conan for Dark Horse when it first started.
Yeah, it's
Cary Nord. He's awesome.
Yeah,
but it's like got this.
I like this representation of her.
Yeah,
like I think
you
that
know. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of if Frank Miller's Dark Knight Strikes Again was good.
Yeah.
like if you took the like modern era Frank Miller art, right. Which I don't love, although I actually do kind of love it, but I love it for the reasons that aren't why I love this, which is that it's awesome art. Like I love the Frank Miller stuff because it's just like it's great that he can do whatever he wants. And
it's like, know, it's like somebody took that and polished it.
Yeah.
It's like somebody took like Frank's. It's would be kind of like the roughs.
Yeah.
And then somebody took over.
It's angular and
which is
and it's yeah. It's kinetic too. I just really actually
it's
enjoy
just
it.
Like what our friend Ben Bishop is doing on Turtles right now.
Nice. I can
he's
see that.
Doing a doing a Raphael series with Kevin Eastman.
Yeah.
And he's basically Kevin Eastman is doing his style and then Ben is doing his style over it and he's kind of finishing it and making it smoother and
that's cool.
Giving it kind of a more modern feel.
Yeah.
It looks good. The roughs look great. It's funny because the roughs look like Kevin Eastman. So it's like, oh, this could have been just a comic by itself as Kevin, but he's having Ben do the finished art because Ben's fucking great.
Yeah, he is. And actually, as long as he came up, there was recently an ad somewhere in a comic book or a magazine that I read that it was like, this Comic-Con is coming up. Maybe it was like North Carolina or something like that. It was somewhere in the South, I think. And it was like a list, like a little blurb with like all the people that are going to be there. And it was like Gerard Way and like all these, you know, kind of like big names, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Ben Bishop's name was there with them.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's so fucking cool. Like that there's like this blurb and it's like here he is with these. And it was big comics guys too. I mean, obviously Gerard Way is a big comics guy to some extent. But it was just really neat to see
it
that.
Is
and I'm very happy
it's very cool to see that. Yeah, Ben is really coming into his own, so I'm stoked about that. I'm really stoked for this new Raphael series that he and Kevin Eastman are doing.
Nice.
And hopefully we'll be able to get Drawing Blood in as well, which is the other thing that he did with Kevin.
Cool.
So and hopefully this also means that he can convince Kevin to come in and do a goddamn signing at the store.
Yeah, and then you can get Peter Laird to come in and draw Turtle Man.
Exactly.
Sorry, that's a Who's Who reference for anyone who is paying attention.
Who is who?
Who is who? I'll tell you someday. You won't want to know, but I'll tell you.
Well, let me tell you one thing.
No, you're going to tell me about Justice League Odyssey?
Yes, Justice League Odyssey Part 3 came out, and it's an Odyssey with the Justice League. I didn't care for it.
Dear DC editorial, cancel Justice League Odyssey and then just like put all of the advertising push that you would have put behind it and Justice League Dark and just put it behind Justice League Dark, which is a fucking amazing comic book.
Yeah.
This Justice League Odyssey is it's not terrible. It's not bad. I actually kind of like the art in it. It's just like, who cares? It doesn't matter.
It's weird. It's weird. Maybe it might be my dislike of space stuff. I don't know, but it's really
all the
just
stuff that's spinning out of Dark Knight's metal is just like loose and like it has there's no spine. It's just like this is the only reason you know it's spinning out of Dark Knight's metal is that there's someone told you it's spinning out of Dark Knight's metal.
Yes.
It's like it has nothing narratively to do with whatever that comic was about. Sorry, I don't want to be a negative guy,
but
I just
not
don't, I'm not enjoying Justice League Odyssey, even though it has lots of characters that I think are good characters, and it has good art, and it probably, who's the writer? It has a good writer, too, I'm sure. No, I don't know who the writer is.
Well, let me tell you what I am enjoying.
Oh, yeah.
Uncanny X-Men.
Yeah, we saved it.
What a
it's good.
Great comic.
Liked it.
The art this time was not as spectacular as the rest of them, but
it's a weekly comic.
But it's a weekly book, so it's not going to be perfect. I mean, it's not Igor Cordy. It's it's passable.
I liked that guy.
Of course you did.
Of course I did. I didn't like his X-Men work, but
no.
I do like that guy.
No, I feel bad for him. It's unfair.
Yeah.
They probably gave him a week to shit those fucking pages out, so I feel terrible for him.
Also, he doesn't have an X-Men style.
It's not his fault.
If he did like a Beast book or something like that, like maybe, but like not a team book. I don't know.
No.
It just wasn't That was a Grant Morrison thing where I'm sure Grant Morrison was like, I want this guy, and you know, I don't know, whatever. We're not pooping on him. He's a great artist. Uncanny X-Men number 3, you get a little bit more of who is behind the scenes of trying to kill all of the X-Men, and it is it's a good story so far. Enjoying it.
Yeah, and you get a big heaping dose of Legion, which is fun.
Yeah, and oh man, not to spoil it, but like there's a really cool mashup, let's say,
yes,
of two characters that I think is actually brilliant.
Yeah.
And they could have done a lot more with it. It's kind of like, oh, this happened, and they realize that it happened off panel, and it's something that kind of was happening over the course of the issues, but like, man,
yeah,
that was a cool, someone had a nice brain nugget there. That was a good one.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So yeah, there's some cool stuff happening. Yeah. I'm really digging it.
Neat ideas. Good ideas.
And, so Marvel 2-in-1
ending with a whimper, I think, unfortunately. Yeah,
probably literally the weakest of maybe the entire series.
Yeah. I tried, It bills itself as a Human Torch Invisible Woman team up, although it is really just a Fantastic Four story. And it is kind of, I think it's Chip Zdarsky's kind of swan song with the FF characters. I thought he had a really good take. I would have liked to have seen him on Fantastic Four as a writer. I think he would do a great job with those characters. But this issue was just kind of like it came and went. Eh.
Yeah.
So the next one is the DC's Nuclear Winter. I guess they're saying, hey, the world might die in a fiery atomic blast, but you know, here's some stories that make fun of that.
Basically they're saying the world is going to shit here. Let's,
yeah,
you know, if the world does end, there's still hope afterwards. It might be fun.
Yeah, there's actually a really great Firestorm comic in there by Paul Dini and Jerry Ordway.
There's a great bunch of great comics in here.
There's a great Commandy by Phil Hester story.
I really liked the Aquaman story a lot.
I kind of checked out by the time the Aquaman story came around.
I thought that was great.
Cool. I remember being like, oh, that's interesting. As
the
like,
Catwoman like, story is great too. Like, yeah,
it was too much comic for me. On top of all, well, like I read it like very close to the
that
end.
Is the other thing is well. That it's also a $10 80 page giant. So yeah. It's like it's a ginormous book.
But that Paul Dini, Jerry Ordway, so it's yeah. like in the nuclear wasteland, the only people left are Firestorm, the nuclear man, and the nuclear family, which is a family of atomic robots who were villains in the Outsiders comic in the 1980s.
Wow.
Yeah. I actually know about them from reading Who's Who.
Nice.
Very
Good
recently.
Job.
And I probably would have remembered them anyway.
It's awesome.
That's
cool.
Me.
Yeah. I very much dug that book. Even though it is a $10 issue, I probably would pick it up.
Yeah. It was,
I think that would hit my buy pile, even though it's $10. Mm.
Cool.
So, Hellboy and the BPRD, 1956.
Yeah, three stories in this one. The first one is a huge
heart-grabber
for long-term fans of Hellboy. The other two stories, I kind of was just like, yeah, I wish the first story was just longer.
Yes.
But, yeah, it's funny for me. I had a great Dave Stewart cover. It's Hellboy, set in the 50s.
Yeah.
That's my two cents.
My
that
two
first
cents
story,
is,
although if you remember Mac, his dog, man,
oh, come on, guys,
that was rough.
Sad dog story.
Sad dog story.
All right, Fantastic Four number 4.
It was at first I hated it, and then I figured out what they were doing, and I realized that it was actually kind of okay, if a little confusing.
Yeah. You know, it continues to be a fun Fantastic Four story.
Yeah, it's setting up the Fantastic Four now back on Earth. They're not fighting some generic space villain, and they need a new headquarters. And also, there are some weird characters running around.
Yes, because
with Fs on their chest.
Yes,
the Fail Squad.
I mean, it's so weird. Yeah.
Yeah, well, whatever. It's
it is what it is.
Everything that we're saying about it is in the solicit, so I don't want to spoil much. But
Terrifics.
Terrifics came out, and if you're following Terrifics, Terrifics came out. It has a great Doc Shaner cover, and I didn't love it. I didn't hate it, although Terrifics is on paper a huge series for me. I actually really, the biggest thing I'm not enjoying about Terrifics right now is the Metamorpho is in the regular body of Rex Mason and not Metamorpho, and that's a huge turnoff for me. Metamorpho is my favorite, and if he's not in the comic for, you know, 5 issues, it's just like, okay, like, bring him back, give him his element powers, bring out the element dog,
yes,
maybe the element girl. I need them all. Bring them.
Every element.
Bring them. Now we're going to talk about...
Now we're going to talk about Books of Magic.
Loved it.
Me too.
Loved it. Loved it. It was the first book in all of the comics that I read today. It just happened to be the first one I got to that I actually was like, yes.
Yeah.
So good.
It's funny because I thought they were going to take a really long time to get to this point.
Mm.
I thought this was going to be like...
Oh, that page is so cool.
I know. I thought this was going to be issue 5 by the time something really went down. And nope. Issue 2.
Nope.
Timothy Hunter flexes his magical muscles in this one, and some shit goes down. It's great.
Yeah. We should probably have done a better job saying who made these comics. This is by Cat Howard and Tom Fowler, and I think Tom Fowler is the bee's knees. I like that guy a lot. He's a great comic book artist. And Cat Fowler's story is good. It's new reader friendly, but also there's a lot there for people who have been following Books of Magic from the beginning. Good stuff.
Yep.
Loved it.
And I guess this is the last thing.
The death of the podcast.
The death of Daredevil.
This episode of
That's, death of Daredevil. So Sewell, Noto.
Yep.
Yeah,
it's the last issue of their run. Yes, and then there's a new Daredevil coming out soon.
There's some new character who is going to be the Man Without Fear. He's not going to be Daredevil.
What?
So yeah, I mean, Matt Murdock is dead at the end of this issue.
Sort of.
Well,
I mean,
yes, he is.
As much as we believe that he,
well, as much
is
as
dead.
As much as any superhero character ever dies, but I for mean, the for the purposes of this book, he's
that,
dead.
That sure looks like a.
It goes the other way. That's a flat line.
No, this is the flat line.
Is it?
And then here's the heartbeat at the very end. You have...
Sorry.
Sorry. Anyway, whatever.
What I mean to say is he's dead.
A lot of this issue is cerebral, and that is not a big thing. I am not a huge fan of... Like, if you're going to do a story with zero consequences, I prefer it when you're like, this is an imaginary story, and then it's like, Supergirl's in love with a horse or whatever. You know, like...
I wish Daredevil had been in love with a horse.
By the way, yeah, exactly. If this was the entire issue was going to be inside Daredevil's brain, I would much rather he fell in love with a horse.
I will say, as far as this was handled, it was a lot less melodramatic than I was expecting it to be.
I thought it was
I mean, the last few pages were super melodramatic.
I was going to say, did you expect it to be really melodramatic?
Well, I expected the whole thing to be melodramatic, yeah. And it was just, you know, obviously the last 4 pages where he's dead,
yeah.
that were pretty melodramatic.
Those black pages with nothing on them where he's just dead.
Yes. You pay extra for those.
Is that true?
I hope they paid the artist for each one of those black pages. Do you get your page rate?
Yeah, it's
rate
Phil Noto. I like him. I hope
Do you
he
think
got
Noto gets his page rate for those? I bet he does.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't think that those black pages affect negatively the overall page count of... I mean, I'd like to think that. The letterer definitely got paid for this page.
I think that he submits completely inked up white pages that are just completely blackened, and they scan them in.
I hope
for
so.
For each one of those.
I mean, I hope
and
so.
There's four
I just,
different ones.
This was a run that I didn't pay a lot of attention to until the end. And then I was like, this is really cool. And then I didn't end up loving the last issue.
It's sorry. Funny. I'm not.
I'm so sorry.
I'm
so sorry, Charles Sewell. I like you a lot.
I like both Sewell and Noto.
Phil Noto is great.
And I'm not. I didn't love his art on this Daredevil run. Like, it didn't feel. I mean, maybe I have such specific wants out of a Daredevil book, but it just didn't do it for me.
Phil Noto, for me, is one of those artists that his art is beautiful, but it doesn't have a lot of life to it. And I think...
I can see that.
It's just one of those ones for me where it's like Alex Ross, where it's like, it's just amazing art. Like, his skill level is super high, but the art doesn't have like a ton of life. And I hate saying negative stuff. Like... So yeah. I'll stop talking.
No, it's yeah. But either way, Daredevil's dead. Long live the Daredevil.
Yeah, soon there will be a new Daredevil series that doesn't star Daredevil.
It'll be some mysterious character.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's about it.
We're at the end. There are many other comics. Pay attention to our Instagram page, yes, which we started out.
Actually, I'll have photos of every single book that we have in stock.
Yeah, in our story.
All sorts of things that are online only. Yeah. So check it out.
Yeah. And there'll be many posts of comics panels for the week.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Have a good evening.
Yes. God, I need some cover.